an Osho talk. Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt, number 13.
Once, when Tozan was traveling with another monk, they saw a vegetable leaf floating down a valley stream. Tozan said, "If there were no one in the deep mountains, how could there be a vegetable leaf here? If we go upstream, we might find a wayfarer staying there." Making their way through the brush and going several miles up the valley, they suddenly saw the strange-looking, emaciated figure of a man. It was Master Ryuzan. His name meant Dragon Mountain, and he is also known as Yinshan, meaning hidden in the mountains. Tozan and the other monk put down their bundles and greeted Ryuzan. Ryuzan then said, "There is no road on this mountain. How did you get here?" Tozan said, "Leaving aside the fact that there is no road, where did you enter?" Ryuzan said, "I didn't come by clouds or water." Tozan then asked, "How long have you been living on this mountain?" Ryuzan said, "The passing of seasons and years cannot reach it." Tozan asked, "Were you here first, or was the mountain here first?" Ryuzan answered, "I do not know." Tozan said, "Why not?" Ryuzan said, "I don't come from celestial or human realms." Tozan said, "What truth have you realized that you come to dwell here on this mountain?" Ryuzan said, "I saw two clay bulls fighting go into the ocean and up till now have no news of them." For the first time, Tozan bowed with deep respect for Ryuzan. Then he asked Ryuzan, "What is the guest within the host?" Ryuzan said, "The blue mountain is covered by white clouds." Tozan asked, "What is the host within the host?" Ryuzan answered, "He never goes out of the door." Tozan then asked, "How far apart are host and guest?" Ryuzan said, "Waves on a river." Tozan then asked, "When guest and host meet, what is said?" Ryuzan said, "The pure breeze sweeps the white moon." Tozan took his leave and departed.
Manisa. This is the last anecdote in this series, and you have chosen a very beautiful, meaningful and significant dialogue for any seeker . The words are from a great master Hence, you have to be very silent to understand it. So silent as if you are not. You can sit silent like a Gautam Buddha. But your mind goes on weaving. Strange and unnecessary thought patterns. And those patterns become the barrier to understand what we are trying to do. It is not a mere lecture. It is a search together for your innermost being. Now, yesterday, when I told you about the great urge of shopping, at that very moment, Avirbhava was thinking where to go. And in her mind she thought that Bhagwan has mentioned Bangkok, Singapore, Hong Kong, London. Okay, I will go to LA. On the surface she was laughing, and inside she was going to LA. First she must have been going to Bangkok, but because I denied those three places, now do you want me to name all the places of the world? But you won't drop shopping. The question is not Bangkok or Singapore or Hong Kong. The question is your mind is continuously. She is sitting here and thinking of Ellie. And it is not only her situation. This is the situation with almost everybody. Everybody is going towards LA. Different LAs. Nobody is absolutely here, because the moment you are absolutely here, you disappear and the Buddha appears in your place. You will find yourself dispersing like a cloud, and a new image, a new golden image, of pure consciousness will start arising you, just like a mountain peak. Each silent moment is the only moment when you live. In a 70-year life span, if you can live only 7 minutes as a Buddha, that is enough. But unfortunately, even in 70 years, you cannot manage 7 minutes. The mind goes on and on. like a Descartes is stuck, going to repeat the same thing. The mind can never be original. It only knows how to repeat. Have you seen a buffalo chewing? Exactly that's what the mind goes on doing. But all chewing is nothing but chewing gum. It is an stupid act. Even the bamboos are laughing. They know that although everything's to be silent, underneath, everybody is sitting on a volcano. This anecdote can become a transforming force in your life. These few minutes here can create a new man out of you. Just a small thing has to be done. Say to the mind, shut up, and be strong enough not to be involved or identified with the thinking process. It has become our habit. We have almost forgotten that we were born without any thinking. All thoughts are nothing but dust that has gathered upon us during the time we have been growing up. And this dust is preventing you to see yourself. These anecdotes are small but very emphatic ways to remove the dust. Make the mirror clean, so that you can see your original face, the face that existence has given to you, not the face and the personality which the society has imposed upon you. Remember this, that your personality is an imposition by others on you. With all good intent, your parents, your society, your teachers, all have been trying that you should not be yourself. You should be somebody else. And they provide the ideal who you have to be. And unfortunately, this is impossible. You cannot be anyone else than existence has intended you to be. But you can miss your destiny. You cannot be anybody else's destiny, but you can miss your destiny. And the way is very simple. Try to be somebody else. And slowly, slowly, a personality, a false mask, which is not you, which consists of expectations of others, arises and covers your innocence. And that innocence is your only treasure, your very eternity, your deathless life. Once, when Tozan was traveling with another monk, they saw a vegetable leaf floating down a valley stream. Tozan said, if there were no one in the deep mountains, how could there be a vegetable leaf here? If we go upstream, we might find a wayfarer staying there. Making their way through the brush and going several miles up the valley, they suddenly saw the strange-looking, emaciated figure of a man. It was Master Ryuzan, a very famous name in the history of Zen. His name meant Dragon Mountain, and he was also known as Insan, meaning hidden in the mountains. Because he was there in the mountains, far away from people, just sitting there, doing nothing. The silent mountains. And if you are not doing anything, how long your mind can go on persisting about things which have become out of date, which do not relate to you anymore. As time passes, the thoughts become thinner, and a moment comes when simply you are without any thoughts. And this moment, when you arrive to the clearance, the opening of your consciousness is the most precious. Because it is your hidden nature. It is your splendor, it is your dance, it is your joy, it is your freedom. Once you have entered into it, there is no way to be miserable, there is no way to be tense, there is no way to be in anguish. You have simply passed all those which used to be your constant companions. Ryuzan, in his answers, proves his great understanding. Tozan and the other monk put down their bundles and greeted Ryuzan. Ryuzan then said, "There is no road on this mountain. How did you get here?" Tozan said, "Leaving aside the fact that there is no road, where did you enter?" Now, these are great dialogues. Now they are no more talking about ordinary roads. Ryuzan's question was not concerned with the ordinary road, but it appears on the surface as if he is asking, "There is no road on this mountain. How did you get here?" Tozan himself was a master. Anyone else in his place would have been a failure. He would not have understood the meaning that there is a place in our being where no road leads. Still you can reach there without any vehicle, without any road, without any guide, without any map. There is a point in our being where we can reach because there we already are. We don't have to come. Just we have to withdraw our thoughts and imaginations . Drop all that is false and just to remain together in the deep solitude . Tozan understood it exactly, that Ryuzan is not talking about ordinary roads. He said, "Leaving aside the fact that there is no road, where did you enter?" We will discuss about the road later on. For the point, this moment, if you can enter here, why we cannot enter here? Leaving aside the fact that there is no road. He is showing his Zen understanding very clearly, that if you can reach here without any way, why can we not reach? He is making such a great statement that can be translated in 1,000 ways with 1,000 implications. It means that even one person can become a Buddha. In his Buddhahood, he has many facets declared. Everybody's Buddhahood. His Buddhahood means that man has the capacity and the potentiality of being a Buddha, whether you become the Buddha or not, that is not the point. But your potential has been shown clearly that this is the destiny of every human consciousness. Ryuzan said, I did not come by clouds or by water. Tozan then asked, how long have you been living on this mountain? He dropped the subject. Because Ryuzan's answer makes it clear that there is no way to say. All that I can say, I did not come by clouds or water. There is no road. But I have come. Tozan then asked, how long have you been living on this mountain? Ryuzan said, the passing of seasons and years cannot reach it. Time is not a measurement. For consciousness, in your deepest being, you have been always here, and you will remain always here. You never move from here. Everything else moves around you. The whole world moves. All the stars move. There is not a single thing except your consciousness which does not move. But your consciousness is the center of the cyclone. It simply remains here. Ryuzan's answer is so beautiful. The passing of seasons and years cannot reach it. It is beyond time. The passing of seasons and years, don't ask stupid questions. Tozan asked, were you here first, or was the mountain here first? From the point that he has been rebuffed, he tries another way to bring time in. And to bring it in such a way that Ryuzan will be caught. He asked, were you here first? Or was the mountain here first? Ryuzan answered, I don't know. Who was here first? Whether I was here first, or the mountain was here first. I am living here without bothering about the mountain and the forest and the river. Without bothering who came first and who came second. It has been a constantly asked question by all theologians, philosophers, who came first? The Bible says the Word was in the beginning, the first. Then came in God. But seeing the foolishness, whoever wrote that statement immediately added that God and the Word are one. Because the question will be that without anybody, how there can be a Word? The Word needs somebody to speak it. But if you put God first, the question remains the same. For centuries being discussed, Zen never discusses that question in the old pattern, in words like God, creation. If God was there from where He came, He must have been here always. This much seems to be absolutely certain, that He cannot come from anywhere because the creation has not begun yet. It is Monday morning. Where He was the last night and the day before, and for eternity what He was doing, because He created the whole world in 6 days. On the seventh He went on a holiday. And He has not returned since then. A strange holiday, that long, and to finish this whole existence into 6 days does not seem to be possible. Once I was going to travel and I told my tailor that, you know that I am very fussy about my clothes. They should be ready absolutely without any flaw. And there are still the whole week. He looked at me, a very old man, a beautiful old man. And he said, before asking me to finish your clothes in 6 days, because you are leaving on Saturday evening, just look at the world, what happened. In 6 days God created this chaos. And you are asking me, if everything goes wrong, don't say anything to me. In 6 days, I cannot manage. You will have to find God to make your dresses. He was a very religious person. He said, make it a clear point that it is because of 6 days that this world is in constant trouble. It is a chaos. It is insane. And the responsibility lies on God because He never returned on Monday back to office. The atheists have been asking the same question. They are also asking what was the cause that God at a certain point decided to create the world. Why not a day before or a day afterward? There must have been some cause. Either God is whimsical, eccentric, just for no reason at all, just created this whole chaos. If you want God to be rational and reasonable, then you will have to answer. And Christians particularly have even managed to count the years, the days, the time, the moment when He created the world. Exactly 4,000 years before Jesus Christ. That means 6,000 years from now. And this is such a stupidity that we have found cities 7,000 years old in Mohenjo-daro, in Harappa. We have found skeletons of animals on Himalayas 90,000 years old. And it is so hilarious that when these things were pointed out, that 6,000 years seems to be very small time. And how you can explain a 90,000-year-old skeleton? One great Christian thinker came with the idea that he created at the same time a skeleton that looks as if it is 90,000 years old, just to test your trust. If you begin with one stupidity, you are going to end into another stupidity. What is the need for him to test the trust of the people who are not even created yet? And it is in his hands to create people who can be trusted or not trusted. But all the religions are so contradictory. God creates man, but all religions praise celibacy. They don't allow men to reproduce, to bring life. God is the first criminal in that sense that he started the world. And he is the criminal that he has put inside you a system of hormones which allow you to reproduce. If he was against reproduction, if he was for celibacy, as all the religions preach, then he should have not put those hormones. In the first place, the thing was so simple. Now, psychologists, biologists, physiologists, all are in immense trouble because they can see that even a murderer has a certain pattern in his mind. He cannot avoid being a murderer. And that pattern is not created by him. It has come with his birth. A man who commits suicide has the tendency in his very chemistry. If anybody is responsible, it is God. And moreover, what was the reason to disturb the peace of this universe? Silent stars. What was the need to create Adolf Hitler's and Ronald Reagan's and Joseph Stalin's? These poor fellows are also creations of God. If God takes the responsibility of creating the world, he has to take the responsibility for everything. For Timur Lane, for Genghis Khan, for Nader Shah, for all the murderers. Just Genghis Khan alone murdered 40 million people. Adolf Hitler alone murdered 30 million people. It cannot happen without their chemistry basically provoking them to murder and go on murdering. Just today, Neelam has brought a picture from a newspaper. A murderer who was a saint and a priest. And he was giving poison in prasad. In every Hindu temple, you are given prasad as a gift from God in the form of some sweet. He was giving poison. 11 people certainly died. And he confessed in the court that more may have died or will die. And he was not at all hiding the fact he was sentenced to the gallows and asked what is his last wish, which is a tradition to ask a man before he dies if he has some wish. He said only one wish: I want to be seen on the television. And he was shown on the television. Perhaps just to be shown on the television, a deep desire to be a celebrity. He had no reason, he could not give any reason, because those people were not enemies, they were worshippers, they worshipped him as a saint, but he was not becoming famous. There is an ingrained desire, lust for power. All these politicians, who are running to be more powerful, their responsibility is not really on their own soldiers. Why God should create such humanity which is interested only in death and destruction? It certainly proves that there is no God who has made this world. It's simply makes a more rational, reasonable idea to accept that everything has been here from eternity. There has been no one first and no one second. When Jesus was asked, because he was continuously saying that I am the last prophet of the Jews, proclaimed by the Old Testament, that there will come the last prophet who will save the world, I have come. I am the one who has been predicted by the Old Testament. Jews were angry. They could not accept an uneducated, poor carpenter's son who knows nothing, and is proclaiming that he is the only begotten Son of God. Now nobody has seen God. The very idea of God has created so much disease and sickness. But this poor fellow got caught into the idea. You can find in every madhouse people who are proclaiming that they are God. Even on lie detectors, psychologists could not believe a madman was proclaiming that he is God. They tried to persuade him that be reasonable. You are just a human being. He said, don't try. So they put him on a lie detector. Because he was bothered continuously by everybody, doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, asking the same question, who are you? He finally decided that now if somebody asks, I am going to say, I am not God. So when he was standing on the lie detector machine, which is just like a cardiogram, which goes on making a graph of what the man is saying. If he is saying the truth, the graph is symmetrical. The moment he says any lie, there comes a jerk in the graph, just as it comes in our heart. When you lie, just a small jerk, that same jerk is printed on the graph. And when he was asked, are you a God? He said, no. And the lie detector says, he is lying. He is. Now what to do? So deep. Poor fellow himself is saying, I am not. But the lie detector does not listen what you are saying. It listens to your heart. Because even he is saying, I am not, he knows. His heart knows. There is no breaking in the symbolic graph. It continues. When Winston Churchill was Prime Minister, there were at least 12 Winston Churchills in madhouses of England. When Jawaharlal Nehru was Prime Minister, there were many Jawaharlals, but at least about one there is a record, because he was in a madhouse in Agra. And in 3 years of continuously treating him, finally he relaxed and he said, okay, I am not Jawaharlal. Finish. Just let me go. Don't harass me anymore. By the chance, just a coincidence, Jawaharlal was in the city and he was going to come to visit the poor, mad people. The superintendent thought that it is a good opportunity to let Jawaharlal release this man who is cured. They have been watching and he has been behaving absolutely normally. So Jawaharlal shook hands with the madman and told him that, congratulations, I am very happy that you are healed. The man looked at Jawaharlal and said, don't be worried. If what has been done to me is done to you for 3 years, you will be healed too. You will forget that you are Jawaharlal Nehru. I used to be myself. With the idea of God, so many religions have arisen with different concepts about God. Nobody bothers that where is the God? And they have been killing down the ages each other just because their concept of God is right. A concept has been more valuable than millions of lives. Mohammedans are killing, Jews are killing, Christians are killing. Their concept is the right concept. And even a single religion becomes divided into different branches. Because power for lust is such a thing. Martin Luther wanted to be the Pope, but he could not see any possibility. It is a very secret election. First, you have to move from priest to become a bishop. Then from bishop, you have to be a cardinal. There are only 200 cardinals around the world. And when another pope has to be chosen, those 200 cardinals come to Vatican. They are closed in a meeting place where there are 200 small caves. Each one has to sit in his cave and write down the name of any cardinal. Only a cardinal can be a bishop. And he cannot propagate like the politicians. He cannot go cave to cave telling people that, just remember, don't forget. No propaganda. And because Martin Luther could not see any possibility of becoming a pope, he declared that the Catholic pope is wrong and whole Catholicism is wrong. It is not real Christianity. Real Christianity is what he says, and created a division. The whole Christianity was divided into two, the Protestant. Now Martin Luther became the high priest of the Protestants, and what are the differences? Negligible. But Protestants and Catholics have been killing each other. And it has happened to every religion. And it all goes on happening in the name of God. Zen does not talk about God. It is the only unique religious phenomenon which has no God, no prayer, and yet has attained to highest peaks unavailable to any other religion in the world. This question, were you here first or was the mountain here first, was asked to Jesus also, that if you think you are Son of God, then were you here before Abraham, the first Christian? The father of the Jews, were you before him? If you are Son of God, you must have been. And Jesus said, yes, I have been before Abraham. This is the difference between other religions and Zen. When Tozan asked, were you here first? Or was the mountain here first? Vayuzan answered, I do not know. And only a man of great understanding and realization can say innocently, I do not know. Tozan said, why not? Vayuzan said, I don't come from celestial or human realms. I don't come from gods, the celestial realm, and I don't come from human realms. My consciousness has no designation, no categorization. It is simply universal. I really don't come from anywhere. I have been here. Tozan said, what truth have you realized that you come to dwell here on this mountain. Ryuzan said, I saw two clay bulls fighting. Go into the ocean, and up till now have no news of them. In a very symbolic way, he is saying that I saw amongst humanity people are fighting above clay bulls. What are your gods except clay bulls? Seeing that everybody is fighting about, thoughts and concepts and scriptures and statues and temples, Ryuzan said, seeing that, and they have not yet settled, I have heard no news about them. For the first time, Tozan bowed with deep respect to Ryuzan, seeing that he cannot be entangled into any controversy. He cannot be forced to say things which should not be said. He knows. That's why he can say, I do not know. Ordinarily, people who know nothing go on claiming their wisdom, all your Shankaracharyas and all your popes, not a single one is enlightened. But they are religious heads. Now, what kind of guidance these people will give? They are going to poison people's minds. Only a Ryuzan, a man who has the dignity and courage to say, I do not know, is declaring his innocence, his childlike purity. This made Tozan bow down with deep respect to Ryuzan. Then he asked Ryuzan, what is the guest within the host? These are traditional Zen questions which decide whether the master is really a master or just a teacher. A really man of realization or just a man who has gathered knowledge from others, from scriptures. What is the guest left within the host, Ryuzan said, the Blue Mountain is covered by white clouds. The white clouds are the guests. The Blue Mountain is the host, because it will remain and the clouds will come and go. That which comes and goes is the guest, and that which remains is the host. But he said in a very beautiful poetic way, Zen is seer poetry. The Blue Mountain is covered by white clouds. Tozan asked, what is the host within the host? That is another traditional question. Ryuzan answered very beautifully. He said, he never goes out of the door. The host never goes outside the door. That which goes outside is the mind. It goes around everywhere. Bangkok. Where are you going right now? LA. It is the mind that goes, but Avirbhava remains here. In you, in everybody, the consciousness always remains in, it never goes out of the door. The mind travels around the world. The moment the mind stops traveling, you come to a great realization that you are not the one who has been traveling, you are the one who has never moved even a single inch. Who is always inside you, at the deepest center, never leaving that place. In our meditations, we are searching the host. We are all become guests, gone too far away from our own beings. In our meditations, we are trying to come back and let the guest merge into the host. The moment you enter into your very interiority, there is a great explosion of light. You are no more a human being. You have become a Buddha. You have become pure awareness, unconfined, unlimited. Ryuzan's answer is so beautiful. He never goes out of the door. Tozan then asked, how far apart are host and guest? Ravisan said, waves on a river must be a great master of tremendous understanding. He is saying that just as a lake has waves, those waves are the guests. And when the waves have disappeared, the guest has disappeared in the host. The lake remains, the waves come and go. Ryuzan said, waves on a river. Tozan then asked, when the guest and host meet, what is said? Ryuzan said, the pure breeze sweeps the white moon. Nothing is said. The pure breeze sweeps the white moon. Just a tremendous beauty, a blissfulness, a benediction arises. Nothing is said, not even a hello. Tozan took his leave and departed. Hakyu has written, over the peak spreading clouds, at its source the river is cold. If you would see, climb the mountain top. If you want to see, you will have to climb the mountain top. If you want to see, you will have to reach to the highest point of your consciousness. Another Zen poet, for long years, a bird in a cage, today, flying along with the clouds. These small statements defeat great scriptures of other religions. In what a beautiful way he has said everything that is needed to be said. For long years, perhaps many, many births, a bird in a cage, today, flying along with the clouds. Freedom is the ultimate goal. We are all living in cages. Not only of body and mind, but all kinds of concepts, superstitions. Unless we drop all these cages, scatter them, burn them, and become free, just like a bird on the wing, flying away with the clouds, we will not know what was possible We will not know what was our destiny. We will not be able to realize the joy, the ultimate experience of truth. Manisha has asked, Beloved Bhagwan, need I drop Nietzsche along with Jesus? I can't help but imagine Nietzsche up there in the mountains with Ryutan, because he regarded the mountains as a place to examine all that has been excommunicated by morality. And what Nietzsche said of his own writing sounds as if it might be said of these evenings with you. He who knows how to breathe the air of these discourses knows that it is an air of the heights, a robust air. One has to be made for it, otherwise there is no small danger, one will catch cold. Manisha, you don't have to drop Nietzsche or Jesus. You have only to drop yourself. Your dropping Nietzsche will not do. Now you will carry a new mind that I have dropped Nietzsche, I have dropped Jesus, I have dropped Krishna, I have dropped. But I am here, and these people are not your fetters. You are the only imprisonment, the only cage. Drop your eye, and with your eye, everything else will be dropped, and whatever remains will be simply a cool breeze touching the white moon. Before we enter in search of the host, just to make the guest a little light, not heavy, not serious, because this is my absolute and categorical understanding that the serious will never reach to the host. It is only the non-serious playful child who can reach to the innermost. The serious remains always outside. The more serious, the bigger is the distance. I want to teach you to love and to laugh so that you can enter into the host. Nancy Reagan is seriously ill. So Ronald Reagan sends for the doctor. The doctor dashes into the sick room and comes out a minute later asking for a screwdriver. Regan is stunned, so he finds a screwdriver. 10 minutes later, the doctor pokes his head out and asks, "Have you got a hammer?" Regan is not too much puzzled, but rushes around frantically and finds a hammer. 5 minutes later, the doctor comes out, stripped to the waist, sweat pouring from his body, and says, "Have you got a hacksaw?" By now, Regan is going nuts. "For God's sake," he screams, "first you wanted a screwdriver, then a hammer, and now a hacksaw. What the hell are you doing to Nancy?" "Nothing yet," says the doctor. "I can't get my bag open." A Frenchman, an American, and Kowalski go bear hunting together. On the first evening, the Frenchman comes back to camp with a big bear. His companions ask how he managed it. "Simple," replies the Frenchman. "I saw the tracks, I followed the tracks, and bang, I shoot the bear." The next evening, it is the American who drags a big bear into camp. "I saw the tracks just like Frenchie," he says. "I followed them, and then I got the bear." The next evening, Kowalski drags himself into the camp, covered in blood and bruises. "What the hell happened to you?" ask the other hunters. "I saw the tracks," moans Kowalski. "I followed the tracks, and bang, I got hit by a train." Bernie Bodrowski is drunk as he walks into court. The judge looks sternly at him and says, "My good man, you have been brought in here for drinking." Bernie bobbles and slurs, "Okay, judge, let us get started." Prince Abdullah, a wealthy Arab oil millionaire, is being entertained at the White House by Ronald and Nancy Reagan. After he has been shown to his room, Abdullah calls Ronald on the phone and says, "Hey, Ronnie, send me up a whore." Nancy hears this and is shocked, and she demands that Ronald throws him out of the house, but Ronnie is afraid. So Nancy screams, "Then I will throw the bastard out." In a few moments, Ronald hears the sounds of furniture breaking and screams and curses. Finally, Prince Abdullah walks into Ronald's office. His face is scratched and his shirt torn. "Wow," says the prince, "that was some tough old bitch you sent me, but I screwed her anyway." Sneha Nibedanam Gibdati. Feel as if your body is frozen. Let the guest move towards the host. Your innermost center is not far away, just one single step. Don't be afraid. You are entering into your own house. You have forgotten the way. You have forgotten the language. You have been outside long enough. The bird has been in the cage for many, many years, but today the bird opens its wings and moves in freedom in the inner sphere. That is your real home. In this silence you are a Buddha. Remember it. Let this remembrance follow you like a shadow around the day. Slowly, slowly, it will become your very breathing, your very heartbeat. Buddha is not to be worshipped. One has to become a Buddha. Except that there is no worship, no prayer. You don't need any priest. You don't need any scriptures. You don't need to be in any religious organization. You have to be just yourself, silently, peacefully, settling within your home. Make it more clear and more transparent. Nivedana, relax, let go, as if the body is dropped, the mind forgotten, only the beyond, only the cool breeze touching the white moon. You are the blessed ones of this earth at this moment. This silence, this moment, here and now, you become innocent. You can say, I do not know. You become so grateful. That your whole life becomes a simple gratefulness. Gratefulness towards the whole, to the rivers, to the mountains, to the ocean, to the clouds, simply gratefulness without any objects. This is the existential message of Zen. This is the lightning thunderbolt . You have come home. The guest is meeting with the host. Nivedana, come back. But don't lose what you have experienced. Remember it. For a few seconds, just sit like a Buddha, reminding yourself the space that you have touched, the lotuses that have opened within you, the skies that have become your home. Rejoice and then this experience becomes your eternity. Except this experience, there is no God, there is no religion, one who knows this has come home. He has blossomed into thousands of ways, because everybody has to blossom in its own unique way. Can we celebrate so many Buddhas?